proposal mine. Have you heard of Lava May? It's a mobile shower service for homeless people in San Francisco. It's a bus with two hot showers. On September 20th alone, they gave 42 showers. Yes. As their creators say, with hygiene comes dignity. And with dignity, opportunity. Even with the bus's two showers, it isn't enough, so they're looking for financial help to put together a second one. If you'd like to help or just learn more about it, check out their website at lavamae.org, which includes an informative video. Constantine, nickname Tino, Jenny Georges, DVM, MSc, PhD, etc., etc., is professor emeritus and consultant for the Western Institute for Food Safety and Security. He's also quite the storyteller. So how long did you practice veterinary medicine?
After I graduated from the veterinary school, immediately I had to serve in the Greek army for 2 years. And while I was in the army, toward the end, I saw an advertisement in the newspapers about one scholarship, one position for further graduate studies on food safety. So I took the exam and I won the scholarship. And then I had to explore where I'm going to go in an English-speaking country. And I had options, US, England, Canada, and probably Australia. So eventually then I chose an institution in US, and this happened to be the University of California at Davis. It took some time until I was accepted, and therefore during that time I asked one of my professors in the vet school to give me ideas about practicing veterinary medicine before I come, so I'm not sitting at home. So therefore for about 20 months after coming out of the vet of the army, where I served as an officer, veterinary officer, with most duties having to do with the food safety of what the army eats, as well as that time they had also mules, because Greece is a mountainous country, and therefore at that time, either with helicopter and nothing else, you could arrive and on guardian locations along the Greek border with Bulgaria and Yugoslavia and Albania at that time.
And what years are we talking about?
So in the Greek army, I was from April 1, 1957 until April 1, until 1959, 2 years. So after that then, the professor assigned me a temporary job of 3 months to do artificial insemination in horses. At that time, farmers may use male horses for reproduction, but because of the potential venereal diseases transmitted, artificial insemination was the way to eliminate potential problems and abortions. So therefore, the Ministry of Agriculture had initiated a program of artificial insemination, which we started as students, as graduate students in 1956. So this was the second time in 59. So I said, okay, that was for the months of April, May, and June. After that, the female horse, the mares, are not in heat, and therefore we don't have a reproduction. So I went into a place where the year before they had stallions, but now instead of the stallions, we had to do the job. So I went there, and I started my job immediately. The Greyhound bus every morning brings the frozen semen, and I go to the terminal, I get it, and then the farmers from 50 different villages in the area will bring the mares who are in heat. And then I will decide based on reproductive system pathology and physiology, I decide whether it's the right time to do the insemination. Otherwise, they may come back the next day and the next day and the next day. So the news then quickly were spread in the area that in addition to a government hospital with two veterinarians, which was about 20 kilometers from where I was housed, there is a new young man, and actually when I went there for the first time to find a place to stay, I was already in the uniform, so they thought I was a military officer. So the news went around that there is this young veterinarian now, in addition to doing artificial insemination, he will practice veterinary medicine. It happened that Easter was coming. after my housing in that village. And one day, as I was ready to go and celebrate Easter in my hometown, which was only 60 kilometers, by the way, my dad bought for me a motor scooter so I can be able to travel around the different villages. This is a small parenthesis that I never drove any motor scooter other than bicycle. So therefore, the next day, brand new one, it was half a horsepower actually, 49 cc's engine.
Half a horsepower.
Half a horsepower. And that's how I was going back and forth to the city. It was the beginning of the spring. I wanted to go to the sea, where the sea was very close, about a kilometer. So I rode my bicycle, my motor scooter, and I went through the dirt roads along the fields. And suddenly, these shepherd dogs came facing me from the front. I didn't know what to do. I accelerated instead of slowing down and whistle or do something neutral. I accelerated and they ran after me, and I hit one. And I had two bags on either side with my bottles and my equipment, etc. So here goes my body on the one side. The other side goes my motor scooter and the drugs and everything scattered around. But at that time, I was in good body shape as an athlete. Nothing happened to me except the light was damaged. And then I had to fix it without telling my father that within 24 hours, I damaged. And that was something and a nice gift, because out of his pension as a civil servant, he managed to buy that gift for me, which is something very significant. That's the story. Then about a week later, a policeman comes, and I didn't have a telephone in the house where I stayed. It was an inn, actually, with barns in the back where the previous years they housed the stallions. So I lived there in a room in this inn, and there was a restaurant. And then the policeman came, and he said that the police station got a telephone call from a village about 20 kilometers from my place, and a poor farmer had a problem with his cow, and the cow was dying because the cow went to a sack of wheat and ate a lot of wheat, and now she is not responding. She is on the ground, and they begged me to come and have a look. And I was ready within 30 minutes, practically, to get on my bicycle, motor scooter, and go back to my home to celebrate Easter. That happened to be the Sunday of Lazarus. The Lazarus is the story of Christ, resurrected Lazarus from the dead, if you know the story. And that was the day, actually, I was called probably to raise from the dead cow. It didn't occur to me, that story, but I went there. I rode my bicycle, my motor scooter. I went there. There were about 25, 30 people. The cow was outside of the barn. The priest of the village was there. Everybody was there, including also a dog. I checked the cow, who was on the ground with a head on the side toward the belly area. I asked the owner, "Where is this sack with the wheat?" And we got into the barn, and I realized that not much was consumed. The sack was near practically full. So I went outside. The cow had a huge belly, and that made me suspicious that probably the cow is pregnant. And I asked them, "Is the cow pregnant?" And they responded, they said, "Yes, any moment we were expecting the calf, the delivery." That, of course, turned on my veterinary practice knowledge that quite often animals which do not, cows in this case, who do not have sufficient nutrition, especially nutrition rich in calcium, they may have this syndrome called milk fever or parturient paresis. That is that the calf draws a lot of calcium from the bones of the mother, and quite frequently, immediately after delivery and when the calf will have the first milk, again, milk has a lot of calcium, and therefore the body of the mother does not have sufficient calcium, so therefore it goes into the syndrome. And if no calcium is administered, then the cow dies. And also the treatment is very, very simple, just to inject 1 liter or 2 liters of a liquid which contains sufficient calcium in order to bring the balance of calcium in the bloodstream, and the animal will recover in most cases unless the intervention was very delayed. So having this knowledge in mind, and being who I am, a joker, and I like to joke and see people surprised with my stories, I said, this is the time Tino Jenny Georges to be Jesus Christ and resurrect the cow from the dead. So that particular year and the year before, there was drought in Greece, in northern Greece. So therefore, the grass was very poor in trace elements, in different minerals. Therefore, even sheep and goats and cows free in the fields were not consuming sufficient grass high in trace elements, including calcium. And in addition, this particular breed of cows, a Holstein, black and white, is the one which gives a lot of milk, and every liter of milk has 10 grams of calcium. Therefore, at least 10 grams of calcium should come in with whatever you feed. And these people, they got these purebred animals through the Bank of Agriculture, not realizing this is not native Greek breeds who can survive on hay, but they need a lot, and they have to balance the input of diet with the outgoing milk. So that's why this problem happened. And later on in that season, I practically visited every cow in the area in the 50 villages where I had similar problems, including sheep and goats. So all of them had the problem. And with regard to sheep, I was able to discover this disease, which was described in New Zealand, called swayback, due to copper deficiencies. But that's a different story, how I discovered it, having only a stethoscope and a thermometer and a couple of syringes. But I discovered it through going back to school and doing the chemical analysis and measuring the amount of copper in the blood of these animals, and realizing they had very low copper. And then immediately I realized that this was a copper deficiency, swayback, described in Australia. And the treatment was copper sulfate, the one we spray the leaves for curly leaf. You just put that copper sulfate in the water, and that's it. But anyway, back to resurrecting the cow from the dead. I looked around, I saw everybody very sad. I saw the owner very sad, his wife very sad, poor people. This was the only cow they had. And then I went to my motor scooter and I got a 1 liter bottle, which I made it by myself, sterilized by myself, which contained calcium gluconate, that was the drug I have to use. And I asked the lady of the house to warm it up, put it in hot water. I didn't want to inject it directly cold liquid. And she did so, and she brought it. And then I attached a tubing system. And at the end of the tube, I had my needle. And before I injected the needle into the jugular vein here in the neck, I gave the cow a little adrenaline to make sure that the cow doesn't get into shock, because quite often this calcium gluconate, with the first drop getting into the bloodstream, you might have a shock and lose the cow. So therefore I gave a little adrenaline to boost the pumping system, the heart, and then I decided to administer the liquid. In the meantime, I checked the heart. I barely hear the beats of the heart, pulses undetectable. And in addition, with my fist, I checked the stomach, which also had no movement. Practically, the cow was nearly very close to death. So if I delayed maybe an hour, maybe it was going to die. So practically then, very weak pulse, barely detectable, and no movement in the of the stomach. So I assured everybody around me that they don't have to worry, that because today is Lazarus Day, I'm sure I will be able to resurrect the cow from the dead. The priest intervened and said, "Doctor, that is a blasphemy. I said, with all due respect, Father, you are in charge of your church and I'm in charge of my cow. And I proceeded with my therapeutic intervention. And while I was having my stethoscope into the heart area, with the first few cc's of liquid getting into the bloodstream, already I started detecting stronger sounds of the heart, and the pulse was becoming stronger. And then, having my fist into the side of the stomach, the first movement of the stomach started indicating that we are in the process of full recovery. Nobody knows. Of course, nobody believed me. They saw the cow is still dead, practically dead. The cow doesn't know that she's going to be resurrected. And therefore, without any hesitation, I deliver 1 liter of this liquid. And then I realized it was only a few minutes before the cow will be perfectly healed of the ailment, and then we'll be able to ask the cow to get up. So I finished, I took the needle out, and everybody looks at me, the cow is still looking dead, and I looked around and saw the faces of farmers, tired from working in the sun. Everybody still looks sad because I finished my intervention, but the cow is still looking dead. So I saw a young man and I said, what is your education? And he said, I just graduated from high school. Oh, I said, you can recite after me. Oh, yes, of course. What am I going to say? I turned around to the lady of the house and I said, excuse me, what is the name of this cow? Now, the cow was black and white, and therefore they gave her the name Mavrula, which means the black one. The ending, Ula, is the sweet one. If your mother is called Mana, meaning mother, if you call it Manula, means even sweeter mother. So it was Mavrula. So I told the young man to repeat 3 times the following. Mavrula, Mavrula, please get up and run. Immediately the priest intervenes and says, doctor, that is a great insult to God. And I repeat it again, will you please be responsible for your church and your congregation and leave me alone with between me and the cow and Mavrula. All the other people, they felt a little insulted with my attitude to tell the local priest, who is the authority and the representative of God in the village. They didn't say anything, but me, in a cool way, I asked the young man to repeat 2 more times. And he repeated, Mavrula, Mavrula, get up and run. And then the next time, Mavrula, Mavrula, get up and run, and stand up and run. By that time, having my fist into the area of the stomach, practically the stomach had perfect movements and pushed my fist away from the body. And then I checked the pulses, and the pulses were normal, and high pressure was there. Perfect conditions. Now, among the audience, the people following my intervention was also their dog, which was actually sitting next to me, curious to see what happened to Mama Mavrula, because probably he was drinking some milk early in the morning. As the young man approaching the end, Mavrula, Mavrula, get up and run, I grabbed the dog and I threw the dog to the face of the cow. The cow gets up and the cow starts running, and everybody does the sign of the cross. And the priest forgot all about his accusations. He made the sign of the cross, and he said something from the Bible, and the cow was running, and the dog was following the cow happily ever after. The news spread to all the villages of the area. When I say all, I'm talking about a radius of about 50 kilometers. So it was a big area in northern Greece, by the water. All the villages were by the water. And therefore, the news spread all over. And I heard it from the local policeman that the story was this young veterinarian, a military vet, truly resurrects the cows from the dead. They started then eventually bringing everything for every disease to me to be treated, from dogs, from cats, from cows, from horses, from sheep and goats. They didn't bring me chickens. So one day, a man comes with a horse, and the horse was limping. So I told him exactly what it was. I had to clean the hoof. The stone was lodged between, yes. And then I had to clean it. So at the end of my intervention, when the horse started walking normally, the farmer, with a very serious attitude, says, "Doctor, don't you think also 1 liter of calcium may do the dog even better than what you've done?" And I told him, "Listen, calcium is not for everything, but in this case, it had nothing to do with calcium deficiency." So this is how then I became a famous man. And years later, after 6 years in America, when I returned back to Greece and I saw my professor who assigned me to that area, he indicated to me that everybody remembers me in that area. In the meantime, the hospital had more veterinarians, and about 35 years passed. And in a veterinary meeting in Greece, I met the director of that particular hospital. And he said, "Oh my God, finally I meet this ghost, Constantine Jenny Georges," because wherever I went in every village in the beginning of my career in that area, every farmer will say, "Well, doctor, you did that, but Constantine Jenny Georges, we are going also to do this and especially give also a calcium." So finally, after 35 years, he met me because I was the ghost behind, and he said he couldn't measure to my fame in that particular area. So that's the story of how I resurrected a cow from the dead in 1959. So that's the story. Now we can go back into the story of the Greek army. After my basic training, I went to the officer school in my hometown. Actually, it was located. And after I became second lieutenant, I was assigned duty to a battalion which was stationed next to the Greek border to Bulgaria. And my duties as a veterinarian were to take care of 74 mules, 4 horses, and of course the feeding and food inspection of this 500-man unit. And we had in 4 locations along the border, we had soldiers as guards, and there was a distance for about 15 miles up in the mountains, mountainous area. Therefore, every day, not 15 miles, less than that, so every day my soldiers who are assigned to mules will transport supplies to the mountains, to the other soldiers who are as guards. This place is the coldest place in Greece, and the soldiers, they have to really work hard getting out of the battalion early in the morning and returning after sunset. Very tired, very tired. There was one military regulation that in the barn, every animal has his own location, and on the wall is his ID number. And the ID number is also stamped in the front left hoof. The reason we have this policy is in case of infectious diseases that an animal gets sick, we isolate 2 animals on the right and 2 animals on the left in order to prevent transmission of an infectious disease. So it's disease prevention. And supposedly to faithfully apply the law, the requirement, the rule. But once you are in these places in the mountains with the soldiers coming tired, the animals being tired, it was very difficult to enforce the rule. So quite often, because my house was exactly outside of the gate and I didn't know what to do in the middle of winter and the temperature was 5 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Fahrenheit, I may go into my office in the barns and I can see that the mules were not in the right place, but they are just having a party or walking around. So I was aware of that, and it was very difficult to enforce the rule because of the conditions. So one day I get a telegram from the Greek Army headquarters in Athens that I am included in the Greek Army national team as a long jumper, and I better go down to Athens to start practicing for the global military games in Brussels. So I had to leave for a month and leave my unit and leave my mules and leave my soldiers. The colonel then comes to me. He said, "You know, we are anticipating within 15 days to have an inspection by the chief of staff as well as the general veterinary officer of the Greek Veterinary Corps, and you are not going to be there. And this is very important. Make a note that when there are these kind of inspections, this is how the different officers get their promotions. You know, it's part of their duties to perform well. Otherwise, they don't get their next promotion. So therefore, being me the only veterinarian there, he worried about that during my absence, things may disintegrate, and therefore the unit may not score appropriately, and especially because the conditions are all rough. And it's not like in a city you have an army unit with some animals where they do nothing except horse riding and parading. So he came to me. So I assured him not to worry. But he said, "You're going to be away." I said, "Don't worry, because I train my soldiers extremely well. And therefore everything will go well." And I left for Athens. And when a month later I returned, the colonel was elated. He hugged me and he said, "Both generals said that 30 years in the Greek army, so much experience, and especially in a unit by the borders, far away from main cities, they were able to perform so well, and especially the mule unit, and all the animals were in the right place, something never experienced in units next to borders. They have never seen in their career that all the animals were in the right place." So he embraced me. He said, "You assure me, and I am so glad. Someday you have to tell me how you manage." And at that time I said, "I don't have to delay. I just train them. I train the soldiers well, and I included training of the mules." "What do you mean?" I said, "I have this ability to speak even to the mules, and they listen and they obey to my order." Being who I am and likes jokes, I added something additional. I said, "Sir, with all due respect, I would like you to know also, I taught my soldiers how to speak Russian." He said, "Well, I didn't know that you speak Russian." "Oh," I said, "fluently." So it was just bullshitting that by bullshit imitating Russian language, I trained my soldiers to march, throw the rifles in the air, grab the rifles, and do demonstration exercises in a tremendous rhythmic way. And instead of speaking Greek, I was speaking bullshit Russians. And they knew exactly what is next, and they perform for a parade. He said, "I didn't know that." I said, "Sir, with every opportunity, I would like to show you." He said, "Right away, because I can't believe what you're talking about." I said, "Sir, across the border is the Iron Curtain. Therefore, we have to be ready to understand the enemy language. So that's why I've done it." And he said, "Let's have a look." So I went to the barn area where the leftover soldiers were. The rest of them were on the way to the mountains. And I told him in the past that I may surprise the boss. And when I speak Russian to them, they know exactly what to do. So I spoke to them, and all of them, they grabbed their rifles. They all lined one after another, and they presented arms to the general. And then I gave them other bullshit Russian language orders, and they started marching, beautiful calisthenics, and throwing the rifles in the air and grabbing them, moving the rifle from one arm to the other, and marching, and then running back. And the guy couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. And then I said, again in Russian, meaning, "Well done, now you can go, at least," and they went back. And the guy didn't know what to say. Of course, when his time came to evaluate me, who knows what he wrote, that after 3 months, I was ordered to go to the military academy as a teacher of the military art. Me, the veterinarian, I was called to go to the military academy for vets and surgeons and other personnel to teach them the military art. This is how far my fame went. And then nobody else was transferred to the city because the city was packed with officers. But especially for me, they took me from the Gulag Archipelago and the Siberia of Greece, and I moved into my hometown. And there I became a trainer for the military art, which of course I never attended infantry education, but I had to improvise there more bullshit in Russian languages. So what exactly I did? Well, I call upon the soldiers and I told them, two old generals are going to visit us to inspect the facilities. Now, these two old guys, they don't dare to go between the two mules and read the ID number in the front left hoof. Because our mules are so well trained, you throw a coin in the air and they kick it in the air. And you probably know that if a mule kills three soldiers, we court-martial the mule and then we shoot them. So therefore, these guys from a distance probably will ask you, Sonny, what is the number on the hoof? And I said, that goddamn number is always the same as the one written on the wall. So with a corner of your eye, you go like this, you check whatever number is up there, you pretend you read, and that's the number you report. So if the mule happened to be in the wrong place, it doesn't matter. That mule has exactly the number written on the wall. And that's how I left. And years passed. That's why I became so successful. No mistake. And year passed from 1958 to 1983. I was honored in Athens as a member, honorable member of the Greek Veterinary Society. And they placed my name ahead of my professors. No other Greek was honored that way because the other people who were on the list included Fleming, the discoverer of penicillin, and other famous people, another person who discovered the BCG injection, tuberculosis vaccine, etc., etc. So I was placed in that. And it happened that three of my commanding officers, veterinarians, in the military academy were there, and they wanted to take me out for a drink. And they took me out, and all three, they were permanent career personnel, they came with a big question. Son of a bitch, how did you do it? Because it was written in your file that you managed to have all the mules in the right place, something we never manage ourselves as veterinarians in different duties. You have to tell us. I said, no, I cannot tell you. It's an embarrassing situation. I cannot. They insisted, and of course, after a glass of wine, my tongue was relaxed, and finally I told them, I said, you guys in the military, you pay attention to little things, and you don't see the big picture. The big picture there was under the conditions of cold and terrain. These kids were very tired. The animals were very tired. It was impossible. You insisted on having all the sidewalks white, or you insisted that when an inspection comes, that the soldiers with the nice boots will be in the periphery and those with the worn-out boots are going to be in the center because the general would like to see everybody in good looks. And I'll make a parenthesis here that during another inspection in the mountains, the general of the Army Corps, I'm talking about 30,000 people, he came and at that time they didn't have... They did not have an infantry officer. They didn't have sufficient infantry, so they assigned me infantry duties, so I was a vet. So I was placed in front of my unit of soldiers. But before this man came, and considering that my soldiers, they go 10 miles to go, 10 miles to come back, they worn their shoes so frequently that during the 2 years' service, two pairs of boots are not enough, probably four. And therefore, they had worn shoes, and I'm not going to place those soldiers with the worn foot in the middle and those who have brand new ones in the periphery. Instead, I'll do the opposite. I will put those with the worn shoes outside in order to attract the attention of the general. And that's what happened. And the general comes, and I salute him, and immediately he noticed my insignia and says, you a vet, what the hell are you doing here in charge? So I had to explain that we don't have sufficient infantry officers, and among my duties is also this duty. And then his assistant follows him. They go around my unit of 74 soldiers, and the guy with the eagle eye calls upon me, doctor, what the hell is going on with these boots? They're horrible boots. I said, sir, with all due respect, on purpose I placed in them, these soldiers require two pairs of boots during the 2 years' career. But in our case, because of the everyday walking, they probably need five pairs of boots. On purpose I placed them there to attract your attention so you can order, because these people do the worst job of every Greek soldier, and therefore they are entitled not to suffer. But I said there is an additional reason. I don't want the Bulgarian army across the border to see that the Greek soldier has these goddamn boots with three holes at the bottom. Within a week, all the soldiers had brand new clothes and brand new boots. So that's what I told my former commanding officers, that you guys As in the Bible, Christ said that so many of these Pharisees, the Jewish leaders in the church, they were squeezing and making a fuss about a mosquito while they were able to swallow a camel. So you guys, you swallow a camel and you make a fuss about a mosquito. They became serious, and then I became more of a joker, and I said, you fellows cannot do anything because the statute of limitations has passed. It's over 10 years and you cannot change my biography, and whatever is written, I'll remain as the only veterinarian in the Greek history who was able to put all the mules, teach them Russian language. So that's the story of the Greek army.
Those of you who have served in the military may be able to relate a little to that story, eh? In my continuing celebration of national parks, I'm heading over to the heart of the continent, Voyageurs National Park in Minnesota. There are 218,054 acres in the park, 84,000 acres of which are water, 4 major lakes and 26 interior lakes, with over 500 islands. In fact, all of the park campsites are only accessible by boat. Even the historic Kettle Falls Hotel is only water accessible. The red-roofed hotel has been open since 1913 and bought in 1918 by Robert Williams for $1,000 and 4 barrels of whiskey. There are trails for all levels of hikers, from easy to the strenuous. The interior trails of the Kapodogama Peninsula offer the best opportunity to spot moose and wolves. Voyageurs is also bear country, so if you're planning to camp there, plan appropriately. Campers will appreciate this excerpt from I.W. Stevens regarding his 1932 experiences. After our evenings were passed, we spread our blankets on the floor of one of the smaller tar-papered shacks and retired as darkness fell. After a full day, we looked forward to a good night's sleep. Did we get it? Not at all. Hardly had the flashlight been extinguished before small animals began scampering all over our beds. It soon dawned on us that our nocturnal visitors were mice, realizing that it would be next to impossible to get any rest with those pests crawling over our beds. We went into action to improve the situation. While my partner held the flashlight, I contrived to rig up a contraption that would dump a mouse into a partially water-filled bucket when the mouse attempted to get at the bait fastened to the end of a piece of lath placed on top of the bucket and balanced so that when the mouse dropped into the bucket, the lath would fall back into place and be ready for the next rodent. It didn't take long. After the light was turned off, before there was a kerplunk, as the first mouse hit its Waterloo. That went on for a half hour or so before things quieted down so we could get our much-needed rest. This is cool for those who love to snowshoe. You can borrow a pair from the Rainy Lake Visitor Center free of charge. If you're a fan of period piece mysteries, you may enjoy this book, The Old Buzzard Had It Coming by Donis Casey. Set in 1912 Oklahoma, you are a virtual visitor to the daily lives of a large family's farm, including setting a hot brick at the foot of the bed to warm it up, washing down the body of a deceased yourself when you can't afford to hire someone, assisting in the difficult birthing of a foal, and preparation of meals. In fact, the author includes recipes at the end of the book used by the main character, Allifair. The beginning of the recipe section declares, "Be forewarned, these are not health foods. Heavy syrup and lard are oft used ingredients, don't you know?" This last recipe is for coffee. Allifair made coffee by putting a quarter cup of ground coffee in the bottom of a tin coffee pot, filling the pot with water, and boiling it furiously for 10 or 15 minutes. She knew the coffee was ready when a spoon stood up in the cup. Coffee was usually drunk with 2 or 3 spoonfuls of sugar. Cream was a matter of taste. After drinking a cup of Allifair's coffee, One could go out and happily plow the South 40. Sometimes, one didn't even need a horse. As for the mystery itself, avid mystery readers will figure out who done it pretty quickly. But spending time with the various characters is akin to floating down a lazy river, enjoying the scenery. Do something different. Take the train.